Coffee Break, where Helena comes to talk.
Welcome into Coffee Break. I'm Troy Shockley. Thanks for making us part of your daily schedule. I do appreciate that. And Lewis and Clark County Commissioner Susan Goodgeese, our guest today. Susan, thanks for coming in.
You bet. Always a pleasure. Good to see you, Troy.
Yeah, it's always fun to chat with Susan. And we're going to jump right in because we do have quite a few things to talk about today. And one of the first that we could talk about is just before the 4th of July holiday, you and your fellow commissioners decided on a second reading to allow voters to decide whether or not county elections should be nonpartisan.
Exactly. And this has been an issue that I've been working on for the last 5 years. This is very near and dear to my heart. When I got appointed to the commission, it was after a six-month vacancy. It took 6 months for my party, I'm a Republican, to submit the requisite number of names to the two remaining commissioners to choose their new colleague. During that time, the people of District 2, the district that is actually the heart of Helena, then leapfrogs clear over to Augusta, very strange district. But those people were virtually voiceless for 6 months. That's a third of the county. And Commissioners Murray and Hunthausen did a fantastic job of doing their very best to represent everybody. But there's a reason that we run in districts, and that is so that all those different points of views can be articulated. And like I say, Murray and Hunthausen just did awesome work. Those people had been in effect disenfranchised. So after 5 years of working to get the legislation passed that would allow county commissions by ordinance, which is kind of a souped-up resolution. It's got a lot more muscle than a resolution. You have to have more public notice. You have to have more public meetings. So because it's a very big decision, mm-hmm. right?
Sure.
So really, this is a really very big decision. So we went through that ordinance process, and then the three of us, all three, Commissioner McCormick, Commissioner Hunthausen, and I all agreed that this issue was important enough to put before the voters. And so the voters will have a very simple question to them, but it's an important one. Would they prefer to have their county offices be run in a partisan or nonpartisan way? And so the voters will have their say. These will be mail-in ballots. Always make sure, because people say it's just a mail ballot, but actually, ladies, no, you can vote too. It's not just a mail ballot. But anyway, they will be mail-in ballots. And so those we will be piggybacking on with the city of Helena and the city of East Helena as they go out in the fall for their particular elections questions.
Yeah, I mean, and this is something that the state legislature, as you said, made possible this past session.
Right.
And Gallatin County, also one of the early adopters, they've jumped on this thing and they're going to put it in front of their voters as well.
Absolutely, and they need to do it as quickly as possible, as do we, because if we wait until the next regularly scheduled election that would be countywide, that would be during the primary. So what that means, and that would mean not only to Lewis and Clark, but also to Gallatin, that when the filing season comes, which is in the wintertime, the primaries aren't until the following spring, that those people who would file for offices would have to file and run as partisans.
Right.
And here's what's really interesting and a quirk is that let's say that the voters approve this in November. And so we see moving forward, commissioners and other county officials will be elected on a nonpartisan basis. But if there were a vacancy that occurred with, Jim McCormick ran off with Dancing with the Stars, for example, and abandoned us, and I guess he cuts a pretty mean rug, so that might happen.
I believe it.
He's Irish. What are you going to do? But anyway, if he left, if he vacated his position, then that whole arcane process of the parties.
Yeah,
party
it'd be
insiders,
kind of like grandfather clause.
Those guys would be grandfathered in because they originally ran as partisans. So we're eager to get this. If the voters give us their permission, we're eager to get this in place as quickly as possible because there's nothing partisan about these jobs,
right.
Not one thing.
Well, and what's interesting, though, is that at least as far as I understand it, the candidates would still be able to run and put in the, all of their campaign stuff, I'm a Republican or I'm a Democrat. And this, but then on the actual ballot itself, that's not, you know, there's going to be no letter next to their name.
That's exactly right. And it, nothing changes for the candidate. I mean, he can get contributions from the Republican Party, the Democrat Party, the Green Party, you know, whoever. He can put whatever he wants in his campaign literature. But when the time comes where this really, really comes into play is when it is time to find a replacement.
Yeah, and that's the big impact
because
it doesn't seem like it will really fundamentally change the way people are running. They're going to run the same way they're running already, really, aren't they, for the most part?
I think so. You know, and this is your local government. And, you know, and I'm one of those people who believes that the electorate also has a responsibility. You know, if you've cast an uninformed vote, that's really, that doesn't do anybody any good, really. I mean, if you, these are local people. I urge the voters to take the time to find out a little bit about them. You know, attend a forum, read their literature, ask them questions, and they would have a pretty good bead on where those folks stand.
Yeah, so that's big happenings with you're getting ready, you're counting down, you've got the numbers that you're pulling off as you're getting ready to leave, and you're doing big things as you go out.
You know, actually, I'm certainly not going to be leaving with a whimper. It'll be a roar. I don't know if anybody's whimpered. It might be me, but I love my work. I love my work. I'm privileged to do it every day. I look forward every single day to coming to work. 6.5 years now. 2 days I didn't want to come to work. Every other day I was real excited. So, yes, we have a lot on our plate. We're going to be looking at doing some zoning, which is something that has had needed to have happened for a very, very long time. But it is controversial, and it takes a lot of guts, takes a lot of planning, takes a lot of steel. And so we're moving forward with that. Commissioners McCormick and Hunthausen and I are all in agreement about that. We need to get that done before I go.
That way they can blame you, and then you're gone.
Absolutely.
And say, well, it wasn't
and
us.
There I will
it was
be,
Susan.
Living in Augusta.
Yeah. The work on the new Law and Justice Center, detention center, that's continuing. It seems like things are pretty much on track there.
You know what? We are very fortunate in that we have got some great project managers, and things are on time and on budget, and we went through a process called guaranteed maximum price so that we don't end up with with any nasty shocks at the end. Anybody who's done any kind of a major remodel will tell you, you always find some kind of surprises. But we have done our level best to make sure that we had a pretty good idea of what we were getting into. And then we have a guaranteed maximum price that the taxpayers have agreed to, and we have found other money. So there won't be any big cost overruns or nasty shocks. But, you know, for those people who are incarcerated there, who are being detained, you can imagine with this, everything about that building is loud and noisy.
Oh, for sure.
You know, it's steel and it's concrete, and they're banging away, and, you know, all that electric, all the saws and all that power equipment. I'm pretty sure it's probably unpleasant, but these are people that we can't just like put them up in a hotel, you know. so those detainees are there in place while this remodel goes on, and it is on time and it is on budget.
Yeah, it's going really well. I know something that you talked about recently, something that's a part of that work, is pretrial services and programs. What decisions have been made there? You guys have been talking about that this month during some meetings, haven't you?
Right. And, you know, it's interesting and gratifying because I was a little bit nervous about this pretrial business. I was just a little bit of a skeptic. I am slowly coming to the realization that these programs can really work and actually are working well in Lewis and Clark County, in that the population who is being who is participating in the pretrial services. These are people who have been arrested, but rather than put them directly in jail, we try to find if it's the way to keep them out of jail, which, by the way, costs taxpayers $123 a day, if they would be better served while waiting for their trial or the disposition of their situation, that they're able to stay in their own homes, go to work. And so, but we have, of those people who have been arrested, in our in pretrial service, we have 85% success rate so far. And Lewis and Clark County is by far, in a way, the best program in the state. And we were one of five communities across the country to be involved in more pretrial services, pilot programs that are being run through the federal government. We are the smallest jurisdiction, and the largest jurisdiction was Cook County, which is Chicago. Mm-hmm. So we're very fortunate to be in that number of people are across the country are taking note of the good work that they're doing. We just always keep working hard to make that program be as efficient as possible, because at the end of the day, as far as I am concerned, this is about public safety. And I am not so worried about recidivism rates, because I think that the real metric we should use is how many fewer calls for service do we have? That means what that directly translates to is how many fewer crimes are being committed.
Yeah.
That's what matters to me. Right. Are people more safe in their homes, you know, in their person and in their property?
Well, and we're making the detention officer safer as well, because it was just a dangerous situation for them.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. And you can imagine, okay, so now you've got all of the, you know, the noise of the remodel. And last week in a jail that maxed out at 80, we had 108 people, you know, within those walls. It's way too many. We know that. Very, very challenging for our detention officers, you know, as well as people that we detain, and we need to do everything in our power to keep everybody safe.
Yeah, absolutely. Lewis and Clark County Commissioner Susan Good-Giese is our guest this morning. We have to take a break. We got to get some of our sponsors in here, but Susan's going to stick around, and we got more to talk about coming up on Coffee Break. I just wanted to step away from the show for a few seconds to tell you that if you miss an episode, you can always catch up. We're on iTunes, so find our show there or swing by coffeebreak959.podbean.com. Local and area events, city, state, and national officials, your neighbors doing incredible things. We talk to them all on Coffee Break, where Helena comes to talk. Welcome back in. This is Coffee Break, and I'm Troy Shockley. Lewis and Clark County Commissioner Susan Good-Giese is sticking around to chat with us for the second and final half of the show. And something, Susan, that's always fun to talk about is the budget. And this year's fiscal year's operating budget, it's started, right? That's July 1st that
July
goes?
July 1.
Yeah.
Start of the fiscal year.
So we're actually into the fiscal year now.
We are. We are in week 3. And boy, is it interesting. We start working on our budgets right after Christmas. And they need to be adopted, you know, prior to the beginning of the fiscal year. So we had our department heads start working on their budgets. We have a chief financial officer, Nancy Everson, an award-winning financial officer. She's just outstanding. I think maybe this is our 24th year we've gotten national awards for having very, very good accounting and transparency. The public is able to look to see where every single red cent is sent or is spent. The departments put together their budgets. There's usually not very much drama about that. They know what their budget constraints are. They also know what their needs are. So then the process happens. We move off-site, so there are no other, you know, people coming into the office mm-hmm. or stuff like that. We go off-site. It's a publicly noticed meeting. It's over at the fairgrounds. And for 3 days, we meet with every department and all these other agencies that we partner with, and we go through their budgets, you know, line by line. And interestingly, we had a member of the public come and sit for 3 days and watch how the money is spent. One person. Then we have all these hearings, you know, and we didn't have one person who came, not one taxpayer who came in person. We did have one letter from somebody who was curious about the posting of the budget online. And as soon as those budgets are adopted, they are posted, but we don't post them when they're in the process. One of the changes I will make next year when I'm the chairman of the commission is that we will have some of these budget meetings at night. So that, and maybe different places across the county, so that people, can have even more people, you know, because these meetings are open to the public and all that. We publicize them, but for a lot of people, you know, they're working 9 to 5. You know, not everybody works a 9 to 5 shift, but for those people that do, you know, maybe we should have something at 7 o'clock, maybe out at Roster School. So next year, I hope to do that. But the budget that was just passed was for $101 million. That's the first time we've ever been over $100 million. That comes from property tax, but that is all, money that is all in. That is a lot of pass-through money that comes from the federal government through the states, and that it's given to the counties to actually implement. We're the boots on the ground. So that's where a lot of that money comes from. Also, a lot of that money is PILT money, payment in lieu of taxes. That's money that the federal government gives us because there's so much federal land in Lewis and Clark County that they don't pay taxes, and so we get these PILT payments instead.
Yeah. So what is, I mean, just sort of in general, what does the county budget look like? We talked yesterday with the Helena City Manager briefly about the budget, and here in Helena, we're pushing $1.5 million shortfall. And so it's a matter of trying, So it's a matter of trying to figure out how do you maintain services when you don't have as much money as you had last year. But it sounds like the county is in much better shape.
The county is in. I cannot speak to the city's budget. I'm not asking
right. No, of course.
But certainly for the county budget, we are actually in good shape, very good shape, and we have a contingency fund. We have reserves. That are built up in case of some catastrophic event so that we are able to respond to that without having to go out and raise taxes.
Right.
I mean, we always put a little bit aside for a rainy day. So we're in very good shape there. There were some additional expenses that budget of FTE, new workers that we have employed, and those primarily are associated with the detention center, with going up to from 80 to 150 beds. We needed to hire 37 new detention centers. And here's the trick. That facility won't be open to 150 for another, till the fall of 2020. Excuse me. But in the meantime, you have to have those detention officers up and ready to go. So you have to hire them. Then you have to, first of all, you have to recruit them, hire them, train them, and then so that they're when it's go time that they're actually ready to be in place to supervise those detainees. So this is a particularly challenging time, and the post, which is the police officers training that they have to have in sheriff's department and detention officers, that's a very crowded facility. That we do that training here in Helena. People come from all over the country, but getting into those slots is really challenging.
Yeah, well, and you mentioned having sort of that emergency fund set aside in the budget. Mm-hmm. What happens when earmarked money isn't spent? You know, snow removal, for example. My guess is we didn't spend as much on it this year as maybe we did last year. So
we spent a ton.
I know we spent a lot, but just as an example, you know, you set aside X amount for snow removal, and it was a light winter, and we didn't use quite all of that money. Does that then move into sort of that emergency fund, or does it roll over into next year, or
it
how does
would
that work?
Be, the budget as it stands, first of all, there's hardly any money that is left. That if something is going, and we're using snow removal for an example, so what we're talking about is out on county roads.
Mm-hmm.
That money, I can tell you, was all expended because what out in the hinterlands, where the snow was, we were
Out by your house is where we're talking.
Yeah, and Lincoln. And so it was, but I guess the real nut of your question is what do we do if we have money that is not spent? Mm-hmm. That money will, we're not in a use it or lose it deal. I mean, because we want people to be prudent with their expenditure. And then that money will just go into the set aside so that if we need it for next year, that would be available.
Okay. Perfect. We've got about 5 minutes left, and I don't want to run out of time before we talk about flooding. I know the work over on the Trap Club, that area, the mitigation, that's going to get going here.
What a
big
project.
Right?
And yeah. we had some big challenges with that. Boy, we've got a young engineer, Dan Carlin, working over at Public Works. And, boy, he's working his heart out because those bids came back. Pretty high for the Trap Club mitigation project, but it is absolutely essential that we move forward with that. So we've been working with FEMA and working with the contractor. We believe we have all of the funding absolutely in place before we. But we're going to have to jump out on that regardless.
Yeah.
So, but that's been a great big project. And then when we're talking about flooding, of course, up in the northern end of the county, up in the Augusta area, there will be on May 26th, that's when the flooding hit over that Memorial Day weekend. And there are still roads that are impassable, Elk Creek, Smith Creek, Ford Creek, Goss Creek, all very much impacted. And so there is going to be a task force that is formed with the Lewis and Clark County Conservation District, partnering with Lewis and Clark County to form a task force up there to look at the long-term changes, because they've had 2 100-year floods within mm-hmm. 11 months.
Yeah,
absolutely
so,
devastating.
So we've got some big things happening because we've got to make sure that we're able to stop this, because now it's becoming a trend.
Well, it is, and I don't know, you know, how to account for that. And so we will have everybody from DEQ, Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, DNRC, FEMA, Conservation District, Montana Department of Transportation, certainly landowners up and down the creek, the Augusta Chamber of Commerce, probably 16 to 20 people, entities who will have mostly congruent goals, but not uniformly congruent. So mm-hmm. the big job of that task force will be to keep people working together for as long as possible, as long as we can, so that they are not working at cross purposes to each other.
Yeah, well, and I'm sure you'll be very involved in that, and you should be, because you were throwing around some pretty big flood words this morning.
Yeah, those are geohydromorphology. What's a nice girl like me using words like that? But it is, we are bringing experts in from all over. This will be a project that will be enormous. It'll be many millions of dollars.
And take quite a long time.
And probably I'll be long dead by the time it's all done.
No, I don't know about that, Susan. But it does. I mean, we talk about, you know, hey, we need to do some work down over there on Custer. That needs to be widened. Okay, well, everybody agrees. That's probably a 5 or 10 year down the road project. And so this is something that's similar. I mean, it's going to take many, many years. It's not a snap your finger kind of deal.
Right, and a lot of considerations, you know, that are come into play, and like I say, the big challenge is going to be keeping people who do not necessarily have congruent interests all working in the same direction. That'll be the big challenge.
Well, and you're talking that's tough in general, but we're talking Augusta. We've got some pretty staunchly independent folks up in Augusta.
Boy, do we ever! But I'll tell you what, those people take care of their own, and in a really big way. And but, you know, we have areas surrounding us, for example, like Sun River or Sims. You know, those are towns that have absolutely pretty much evaporated. Mm-hmm. And it's because of the flooding that's occurred there. We don't want that. Augusta's way too cool for that to happen to it.
So if people want to get connected with that, we only have about a minute left. If people are listening and are thinking, you know what, that's something that I'm interested, I want to help, I want to be involved, is that something they can do?
Well, everybody is invited to this meeting on the 30th of July. It's going to be in beautiful downtown Augusta. And Augusta, by the way, is open for business. I always have to do my little chamber of commerce job. But it's July 30th. And it will be led by Chris Evans with the Lewis and Clark County Conservation District. And we'll be working in close partnership over the ensuing time to make sure we can get a bead on this very, very serious problem.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we can get something figured out there, because we can't keep flooding Augusta.
No, we cannot.
We like it too much to keep putting it underwater.
All roads lead to Augusta.
Right.
Thank you, Troy. Thanks a lot for including me today.
No, absolutely. It's always fun when you come in. And Susan is, I want to say almost done, but, you know, 17 months left on the job. You've got time left. You'll be in here a little bit more.
I hope so. I love coming to visit with you. And we get, and you don't have a lot, you have a lot of people who listen to you, because I hear later, oh, I heard you on the radio today. That was
Well, they tune in for you. They don't tune in for Kurt and I, but I know they tune in for you. So,
well, you're very kind.
That's all the time we have for Coffee Break this morning. And we're going to let Susan go and get some work done. Stick around. We've got lots more coming up this hour on KCAP. I'm Troy Shockley, and that's it for Coffee Break today. Be sure to check us out on iTunes. Head on over. Give us a review there. That's always much appreciated. Or swing by coffeebreak959.podbean.com. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you back here tomorrow.